My name's Charles, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Charles.
Oh, it's actually Mike, okay. My sobriety date, September 25th, 2006. And today's been a little bit of a rough day. So I'm at a meeting that I don't normally go to, getting in some extra connection to the spiritual program of action in my life that helps me to not need to drink on a daily basis. This might be kind of tough. If you're new, you're in the right place. I first messed around with AA to try and get out of some trouble, and I mean, that's why I first came here, because I was in trouble. I wasn't court mandated, but it was either this or my parents were going to send me to rehab, and so I came here, and I related. I definitely related. I related enough to hang out, and I participated in some small ways. I got some commitments that didn't involve a whole lot of responsibility. And I didn't stick around. I didn't do the steps. I didn't do a whole hell of a lot else other than go to meetings and hang out with some of the other people who were my age. And that worked really well for me. I mean, you know, like, I try to think of that experience as a very positive thing. AA worked perfectly for me. And so it can work perfectly for you as well. No matter what you're here for, you're welcome. You're welcome to be here. And there's the only requirement for membership is for you to say that you want to be a member. You don't have to do anything or say anything to anybody if you don't want to, or do anything. You can actually just kick it here, and we're okay with that. So, welcome. My experience, however, was that I needed to, when I came back, that I was ready to do the stuff that they suggested around here. And my life has changed extraordinarily because of doing some of those very, very hard things. It's simple, right? I mean, people say I did some very simple and small things, and maybe they are fairly simple and fairly small in certain respects, but they're very hard. It wasn't at all easy for me. And so it was significantly difficult for me. There are aspects of it today that are very, very difficult. But the results that I get from taking those actions are extraordinary compared to the way that I led my life almost 10 years ago. It's extraordinary. When I got sober, I had a dead-end job that I was just hanging out there because I made tips, and so I could drink every day. You know, I didn't have to worry about managing my money because I would always make enough to at least get started at the bar, and then, you know, you have enough friends that they carry you if you run out. Drinking buddies, I don't know if they're really friends or friends, I guess. And I had dreadlocks down to the back of my knees. And it's humorous and unfortunate in a lot of ways, but I think very emblematic, very symbolic of what my life was like, because I hated my dreadlocks, and I had hated them for years and wanted to cut them off, but I could not do anything other than come to with the alarm clock, get my sorry ass to the coffee shop, try and revive my sad ass, like, try and compartmentalize and shove down the terrible feelings that I had about the things that I may or may not remember about last night, and then get some food in my stomach and start to feel a little bit better, And then, you know, maybe it wasn't that bad and everything's okay. And I'm just going to get a sandwich at the bar on my way home. I'm just going to get a pizza at the bar on my way home. And there I was again, over and over again. The same things, and I could never change anything. So when I say that my life today is extraordinary, what I really mean is that today I have the opportunity to change things. You know, I said I had a difficult day. I have a 6-year-old son, and he's almost 7, and I had a challenging day with him, and it's really bringing up some stuff for me about my dad and me, and I'm really emotional about it, and I'm beating myself up about certain aspects of my behavior towards him, and I was talking to Marcel about it before the meeting, and she said, you know, your son, your kids are really lucky to have a sober dad, you know, and so. There were some kids on Thursday at Chips and Cake too, and I was like, that's totally my stuff. I mean, like, I needed to bring my kids to meetings for a long time, and I really appreciate people who bring their kids to meetings. You're welcome here. You know, the people in AA helped me so much when my kids were little. You know, really powerful. This woman came up to me, you know, because I'm in the back of the meeting, and I'm like this. And this woman came up to me, and she's pregnant, and she says, thank you for holding the space for me. You know, like, I need to be able to bring my kid here when my kid is born, and, like, I need you here so that this is normalized, you know, like, that this is somewhere I can bring my kid. And so, you're welcome here, please. Please, you know, because our kids are so much luckier to have sober parents, you know, and because we can change, you know, I can't change him. You know, it's another thing that I really feel blessed to have met Marcel pretty early in my sobriety because, you know, she spoke and talked about this concept about, like, others I can only love. You know, myself I can change. My expectation on him, for him to behave differently, is unreasonable. And it's going to put me into conflict with him. And I need to, and I have the opportunity today, because of having done significant, extensive, multiple inventories that were hard, not easy, simple. I had guidance. I had really loving guidance in doing those inventories. I didn't have to do it on my own. You don't have to do this on your own today. You don't have to do it on your own. You're in the right place. You're welcome here. And you have an opportunity to do things differently today. That's all I have. Thanks.
Thank you, Chad. Thank you so much.
I didn't cry. I was close, but I didn't cry.
And now I will turn the speaker over to our main speaker, or meeting over to our main speaker, who will share her experience, strength, and hope. Here you are, dear.
Just put this on here.
Just clip it to your shirt like that.
Whoops.
Yeah, thank you.
My name is Marcel. I am an alcoholic.
All right, Marcel.
Hi, Marcel.
And my home group is the Too Early Group, which is a big book study at 8 a.m. on Saturday morning in San Francisco. My sobriety date is September 18th, 1988. And I'm grateful to be sober and to be able to celebrate another day of life. I'd like to welcome any newcomer in early sobriety. I hope all my heart and being that you get to stay. Thank you so much, Charles. It's wonderful to see you again. I find that my life is 10% what happens to me and 90% how I react to it. And as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous, I do react less destructively than I used to, which is good because my life used to involve the frequent appearance of law enforcement. One of my favorite acronyms for God is grace over drama. Grace over drama. And if I practice the principle of Alcoholics Anonymous, which are the steps, I have a better chance of staying in grace without the drama. But there's a time in my life, the more bizarre the drama, the better. That is exhausting. I thought it'd be exhausting. I used to go to meetings drunk, and I was at a meeting at 1010 Valencia in San Francisco. I kind of overshot the mark, and I'd fallen off the chair, and I was this little heap on the floor. And Eleanor came in. Eleanor was this tough New York jazz singer, and she got on her knees in front of me, and she said, "Lift up your head, dear. You can have dignity and grace as a woman in Alcoholics Anonymous. She helped me off the floor into the chair. You're welcome to be to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. We help one another. We don't judge and harm one another. Because the more that I judge, the less that I love. September is always an emotional month for me. It's the month of my sobriety birthday. It's also the month of the death of both of my parents, as I was at the height of my disease at the time. And my disease said, I really got things to do. You have time to be for your, there for your dying parents, so I was not the daughter that these two people deserve to have. I'd also gone through a very difficult divorce, and my only son, who I love with all my heart, he told me he was really quite content with me not being a part of his life. One of my mentors in the program many times says he doesn't like the term speaker, he prefers the term storyteller. Because when we come in the rooms, we don't share our dogmas, we don't share our beliefs, we share our experiences through our storytelling. And over the years, after hearing many, many storytellers share their experiences, I've learned how to be a better mother. I've learned how to be a better partner. I've learned how to be a better family member, a better human being. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm also the product of an interracial marriage. My father came from the Philippines to study. My mother's French, grew up in segregated South, came to San Francisco to take care of her aunt who was dying of cancer. If my mother was alive, she'd be 112. My dad would be 105. And both my parents are tough as granite. But they had gentle hearts. My father went overseas to fight in World War II, and sometimes he heard the term that all Asians look alike. Actually, we don't. Okay. When my father came back from fighting overseas, we were mistaken for being Japanese, which is really not too healthy for us following the bombing of Pearl Harbor by the Japanese. So I learned a lot of very challenging survival skills when I was very young. I did not make me an alcoholic, but I'm well aware of the dynamics of racial prejudice and being the other. It's very cruel. I was walking home with my parents one night, and three men forced us to an alley, and they were going to harm us. My father always carried a large knife, and he stood in front of us in a warrior position. He says, two of you will go down. We slowly backed out of that situation. That was one of many situations. When I got sober, my sponsor said, I think you made the decision. You're very, very young. The big V word, vulnerability, not going to be part of my portfolio. I'm not going to give you a chance to reject me. I'm going to reject you first. It's been my experience that Alcoholics Anonymous has never rejected me. Alcoholics Anonymous says, I care what your age is, what your race is, how many degrees you have, what your portfolio is, what your occupation is, what your religion is, what your sexual persuasion is, or how many felonies you have. You're welcome here. Speaking of felonies, I've done meetings consistently in prisons for 26 years. So every month I'm in San Quentin twice a month, Vacaville, Solano, Folsom. I've done a lot of things at the Federal Prison for Women, Dublin, 850 Bryant. And this is very important for someone like me because I'm a volatile alcoholic. I lived in that lifestyle for a very long time and there are consequences. I never want to forget how long that I'm sober. When I drink and use, I'm a toxic animal and I destroy everything that I touch. When I first came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, one of those treasured elders came up to me and said, Marcel, whatever you can do or dream, you can do, begin it, because the future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dreams. And when I came to these rooms, I had no dreams, and I had no hope. I weighed 85 pounds, I couldn't talk, and any dignity it ever has a woman had been beaten out of me. I was dying of alcoholism. That's how I came to you. This program all started with love and service, and her love is a verb. It's having genuine concern for another human being, but then doing something about it. And I came in these rooms with my very best bad look. I'm the one dressed with three shades of black, sitting in the back of the room, just daring you to talk to me with my less than gracious attitude, and I'm armed, okay? And you were kind to me. And I came back to you because you were kind to me. One of my favorite quotes is, whenever possible, be kind. And it is always possible. And that's the Dalai Lama. I used to watch my sponsor, who was the woman who had become my sponsor, so for a very long time, I always had the time to talk to newcomers, but this woman was so alive. She was also watching me. Kathleen thought I was naked Native American because in those years my hair was very, very long. I was also very, very dark because I was always getting drunk and strung out and passing out in the sun. I had an amazing tan. And she'd go home to her husband and she'd say, Jerry, the little wooden Indian is at the meeting again. What is it behind that girl's eyes when I had that look? What happened to that girl? If you lived in that world for as long as I did, a lot had happened to me. I went to meetings. I suffered from acute postponement. You know, I went to a lot of meetings. I almost read the book. And I almost did the steps. I almost got a sponsor. I almost got a service commitment. And I almost stayed sober. But I postponed my sobriety for a very, very long time. Okay, I flew back to Chicago for a family reunion, a lovely celebration, which I ruined. I love that. I ruined that lovely celebration. My cousin's a nurse, her husband's a cardiologist. No one mentions alcoholism. They put me on a plane to fly back to San Francisco. I don't remember landing. I had no idea how I got home. They called my son, who was in LA at the time, and said, "You got to come home. There's something terribly wrong with your mother." So my son arrives home to find his mother weighing 85 pounds, curled off the floor like a toxic animal dying of alcoholism. A beautiful image for your son to see. So once again, he called a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I couldn't stand up. I couldn't sit up. They threw me up at the back of the station wagon, and they said I was screaming at the top of my lungs all the way up to detox. I do not want to be an alcoholic. And they said, "You've got to get a sponsor." And I said, "I want Kathleen." I said, "Well, she sponsors a lot of women." I said, "I want Kathleen." And I said, "Why don't you call her?" So they gave me the phone number. She knew exactly who it was. And when I called, I'd never been able to look at anyone's eyes because my perception of what I saw in your eyes of me was very ugly. How you feel about yourself is projected to others, no matter how much you try and camouflage it. So she drove up there and she looked at me and she said, "Are you ready, dear?" They said, "Eyes are a mirror of the soul," and in my heart, I knew I could trust this woman. And the journey began, one alcoholic woman working with another, and I walked that journey with many women, and they are my gift from God. She said, "Stand up, be proud to be an alcoholic woman in recovery, and do not use your alcoholism as an excuse for not participating in life, because this is a program of living." She said, "A lot of women want what I have, but they don't want to do what I do." And she said, "You are welcome to do what I do." So I went on a lot of 12-step calls. I was sober 2 weeks, and I had 3 service commitments. I've never been out of service commitments. I'd say I had 2 weeks of sobriety, ever. She said, "Every time you go to a meeting, thank the speaker." So I said, "Thank the speaker. It's not easy to get up and share your life." If there's a newcomer there, even though you're new yourself, you just go up to them and say, "My name is Marcel, and I'm glad you're here." Because if you don't welcome that newcomer, they may not come back. I understood that because you were kind to me. But she said, "Try and smile. You always look on the verge of attacking someone. You're scaring people." She said, "If someone has a birthday, you wish them a happy birthday." She said, "You focus on those 3 things, and possibly you'll stop thinking about your favorite tragic," because, which of course happened to be me. Okay. She said, "Don't try to look good in AA. You did not get sober to be admired, or to be grand, or to get caught up in your perceived magnificence." She said, "You got sober to be a maximum service to God and another human being." She said, "Your world will change as you change, and that's going to require ongoing commitment on your part. And anything that you put before your recovery, you are going to lose. It's all right. If you look at your past, stop staring at it." She said, "I don't care how hard you're trying this. You're trying very hard. Some things just come with time. Also, sometimes they don't come just because you're sober. And many things in my life did not come to fruition without the passage of a great deal of time." Kathleen always talks about the delusion of wellness. The delusion of wellness. She said, "You know, dear, after 58 years of sobriety, I'm still learning." And she said, "I will never be too sober that I can't get drunk." So there's no ego there. The difference between self-esteem and ego: self-esteem doesn't need an audience. The alcoholic ego always needs an audience. When I was sober 23 years, I got together with my former husband. I was sober 20 years. I got together with my former husband. I meant I had that scene in 23 years. I got sober. I tried to make the amends to the best of my ability. He's from Germany. As a result of practicing the principles, the guidance of my sponsor, really good friends with his entire family in Europe and the United States. And then there was a loss of the family. I would send him a note. He would acknowledge it. He did not want to see me. Kathleen said, "If your heart is in the right place, if you're coming from a place of love, the universe has the way of opening its arms and helping you with the healing, if your heart is in the right place." He was actually from East Germany. I used to go to East Germany a lot when the Berlin Wall was still up. This was in the late 60s, which was a very different world for those of you old enough to remember that. So I was going through some old photo albums, and I found some beautiful pictures of his mother. He's very close to his mother. I thought he should have these photos. So I got a beautiful card with orange and yellow flowers, because I remember how he cherished his garden. I put the photos in there. I said, "I thought you should have these photos of your mother." And I said, "There were some difficult times on our journey together, but I would like to thank you for gracing my life. And perhaps a time could come we could have coffee and kuchen together." Off goes the letter, and I meant that. 2 weeks later, I go to my mailbox. I opened up, and I see this handwriting that I have not seen for 23 years. It was a very touching letter thanking me for those photos of his mother. He said, "I do not come to the Bay Area that often. I would like to have lunch with you." He lives in a little town called Willits. So he comes down to San Francisco, and we're having lunch in this little Thai restaurant. He said, "I have to ask you, were you really angry when we divorced?" He got married right after we were divorced. I was actually more than mildly irritated at the time. But I found myself saying, "Sometimes we have 2 nice people who grow apart. It was not necessary for you to go in the deliberate manufacture of misery." You will find that line in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the family afterwards on page 133. and dab up a devil and bullshit behind my ear and judge others, and because of that, we had a really nice afternoon together. But that's because my world has changed as I have changed. This is my son's stepfather. When we divorced, he sent my son a very cruel letter. Also, I found out some other things I didn't know about. My son was very angry. And so when I called my son and said that we'd had lunch, I heard my son saying, you know, Mom, I've heard you talk a lot about forgiveness over the years. This is a family disease. This is family recovery. The principle said I eat is forgiveness. My son called it. My son's lived overseas, so what's the right recovery? Which result, my former husband starts sending him cards and letters and calling him. In November 2010, when my son was visiting, they got together and had lunch after not seeing each other for 26 years. He said, I was so honored and happy that Glenn made the time to come and see me because it was such quality time. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. And this is really nice how this all turned out. But if I'd never heard from him again after sending those letters of his mother, I would have accepted that. I had no expectations. I had no hidden agenda. I had no motive. I was just doing it because it was the right thing to do. I went to many, many meetings with Dr. Paul, who wrote Acceptance of the Big Book. And he always used to remind me, remember, Marcel, acceptance does not mean approval. Acceptance does not mean approval. I just accept it one day at a time. And every year since that happened, and my son's always here in November, and he drives all the way up to Willis and has lunch, you know, with his stepdad. You know. My former husband likes to call me. He says, I really like to call you because I trust you. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, my father's family is in Hawaii, and I was just there in February. It's always very emotional when I go there because one of my cousins looks exactly like my dad. I adored my father. I adored my father with every part of my being. He was 5'2", he weighed 118 pounds, but to me, he was as strong as a water buffalo. They had a horse because of Sky, and I adored this man. But I'm an alcoholic, he had leukemia. And I used to take him to the hospital for blood transfusions, and I'd walk in there, and the nurse had to look at me in total disgust. Look at that scum bringing her father like that, and I was scum. And he'd hold my hand, and he'd smile, he'd say, try not to drink so much, dear. He never judged me, he only loved me, and I broke his heart, because that's what alcoholic women like me do. Because what I have to remember, no matter how long that I'm sober, when I drink and use, nothing is sacred. Nothing. My husband, my child, my family, my friends. If you're going to survive, man, you better get out of my life so the time would come and everyone would leave. And the feeling of being alone and unwanted is the most terrible poverty. I went back to school in recovery. My father always wanted me to finish this degree. You know, I was in class one night. And the professor said, pick an object in your house and write a few notes about it and turn your paper over. And then he picked three people in the class to share about their object, and I was one of them. I said, all right, Marcel, get up and share about your object, but without your notes. And I picked my father's favorite chair. I said, this is my father's favorite chair. Now, when I was a young girl, my father would sit in that chair, and I would sit on a little hassock in front of him. And my hair was very, very long, and my father made coconut oil from scratch like in the old country. And he'd put that oil in my hair, and he'd brush my hair and brush my hair until my hair was like strands of long black silk, and that chair was filled with love. My father always wanted a son, so I had my son. My son would sit on my little hassock, and my father would whittle these little toys for him. And then my son would climb his lap, the dog would climb up, the cat would climb up, and the chair was filled with love. But after my father got leukemia, he was too weak to sit in the chair, so I would prop him on the couch with pillows, and I would sit in the chair, and I would talk to him, and I would read to him, and the chair was still filled with love. But after he died, I couldn't sit in the chair anymore. So the chair was vacant for a very long time. So one day I brought the chair up by the fireplace and I would sit in it, I would read it, but there were the times that that chair just seemed to embrace me, just like my dad. Now I said that in class that night, I couldn't talk because I experienced every raw emotion of my father's death that I had not experienced when he died because I was drinking and using at the time. So you may never know that many years down the road, you may get a chance to experience something very sacred in your life. Sobriety doesn't shield me from life. I got cancer in my 11th month of sobriety. Sometimes I get really special gifts. I like the way the package is wrapped at the time. Okay. I've been a runner and a loner all my life. Never had a friend before coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was surrounded by the loving arms of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had four sponsees with cancer, one survived the cancer, now she has MS, I had one with a heart attack, and just, you know. But whatever I'm going through in Alcoholics Anonymous, you will sit with me, you will walk with me, you will hold me.
we are never alone in Alcoholics Anonymous. Once I become an active participant in Alcoholics Anonymous. A man I love with all my heart died in my early sobriety, and I still miss him because I loved him very much. And so many things were left unsaid. So if there are people in your life you love and you care about, tell them. Because the years go by very quickly, and they're gone. One of the last things he said to me, he said, "You never said you were sorry." Which was the perfect time to make things right, and I didn't. And that's one of my regrets. But regrets are an appalling waste of energy. You cannot build on them. They're only good for wallowing in. So do not lead a life, Marcel, that leads to more regret. You got free with your kindness because the language of the heart in these rooms is very real. But the rage did not leave me without the steps. I buried a lot of things when I was out there, but I buried them alive. Unless I incorporate these steps in my life on a daily basis, it's been my experience that history repeats itself. Because sobriety is not the goal of AA, it's just the entrance to AA. And so many times I hear people, I said, I did the steps, that's the past tense. On page 15 of your 12 and 12, it said, these steps are a group of principles. What's a principle? A principle is the basic truth. Spiritual in nature, which you've practiced as a way of life, will expel the obsession of drink, enable the sufferer, which is me, to be happily, usefully whole. I never felt whole when I came in here. And you told me these steps are not punishment. These steps will set me free. And I want to be free. We're doomed to a life of solitary confinement within our own skins. Make it a comfortable place to live, Marcel. It is not comfortable unless I practice these principles. All these steps have a principle. Step one is honesty. And Marcel being willing to change. I don't care how long I'm sober. What am I like when I drink? I'm mean and I'm cruel and nothing is sacred to me and you have no value to me. I don't know what you're like. That's what I'm like. The principle of step two is hope. Believing I can change. Belief leads to reliance and reliance leads to trust. And I trust in the process of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous because any level of decency, integrity, and joy in my life. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. And the principle of step three is faith. The faith and trust to move forward with vessel steps. That's all that is. How can I do think about my character defects if I don't know what they are? So I have to take the courage to take that searching and fearless moral inventory. Also, I was looking at that fourth step. My sponsor said, don't forget the good things you did, dear. And I did do good things. Also, I looked at my fourth step. I got a chance to grieve over the things I had done. We didn't talk about grieving a lot of these. I had an incredible grief over what I had done. Part of grieving is anger, isolation, bargaining with the God of my understanding. In step five, the integrity is sharing with myself, God, and another human being. I never had anyone listen to me in my entire life. I've had the privilege of hearing a lot of this steps. What an honor that someone will trust me enough to share their innermost secrets. This is freedom. Step six is willingness, but willingness without action is fantasy. I think I'll just sit around and be willing and just bundle those resentments. It's quite delicious. It's also exhausting. Step seven is humility. My first glimmer of humility was coming into the room of Alcoholics Anonymous and saying, I do not know what to do, and please help me. And nothing has changed. Human beings are God's language. The eighth and ninth steps, forgiveness and justice, responsibility and restitution. I had an incredible rage over my alcoholic mother when I came in here. The very mention of her name could make me tremble. But through the process of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've come to accept myself as an alcoholic woman and to understand and appreciate her torment and to later come to love her at a depth I never thought possible. I was able to separate the individual from the disease. I did not condone her actions. There's bad stuff there. But my emotion backed demands from a woman who was not capable of giving it to me. Just like you had your emotion backed demands from me. I was not capable of giving it to you. I always have to remember, if somebody takes up too much space in my head, they have power over me. I have to let my mind flow like a river. Water is powerful. You cannot hold it in your hand. But it can break down the strongest granite. But if it doesn't move, if it doesn't flow, it becomes stagnant and it becomes toxic. Same thing with my mind. I don't know how long I'm around. You know, I'm going to have challenges. No matter how long I'm around, I'm going to have challenges. I'm going to have worries. I'm going to have fears. Acknowledge them. Honor them. Share it with a mentor. But then I have to let them flow through my mind like a river. Because if I let them sit there, they're going to become stagnant and they're going toxic. I'm going to hurt you. because that's what alcoholic women like me to do. Principles of 10 is perseverance. I have to continue to look at myself. I always have a tenth of every day. Sometimes I'm wrong. Never mind this sorry business. I am wrong. There's a big difference between I'm sorry and I am wrong. I'm wrong. My sponsor asked me, she said, about relationships. She says, what's important to you in a relationship? For me, honesty, trust, respect, someone I can communicate with, someone I can laugh with. Integrity. Do we have the same values? If that's really important to me, I better work on becoming this person myself. Not here I am, baby, make me happy. I met my partner through service. We've been together for a very long time. We did service for 7 years in H&I before our first date, sometimes quickly, sometimes really, really slowly. And our first date actually was after doing a meeting at San Quentin. And one night I brought him home and he never left. Yeah, that happens. I not only love him, I trust him, I really admire his integrity with his family. And I never go to bed at night without telling him I love him, because I do. I never let him leave the house in the morning without telling him I love him, because I do. I never bothered to do that with my former husband. I was too consumed with my material quest at the time. My money never hooked me. We've had a lot of challenges since we've been together. Between the two of us, we've lost 12 people to cancer, you know. He's had some visual challenges, but we have God, we have the program, we have each other, we have it all. But again, we both practice the principles of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Before I get out of bed in the morning, I lie that I breathe, and I say, here I am, I know you're there, whatever the God of your understanding is. Please guide me today using your tools to be the very best person that I can be, but not to be attached to the results. Please reveal to me what needs to be revealed. Please heal for me what needs to be healed. Please guide me today to bring some happiness into someone's life. And when I go to bed at night, were you joyful to be with today? If not, let's try and do a little better tomorrow. Teresa of Avila talks about treating your insides like a garden. God planted the garden, but it's up to you to water it. And to water the flowers, laughter, caring, loving, giving, sharing, because these are the blooms of life. Stop watering the rocks and the weeds. Fear, anger, resentment, bigotry. Carry the message of the alcoholic who still suffers, but to practice the principles in all my affairs, which includes my family. With my family, I adequate sobriety with time. This I must earn. Had to earn my family's love, my family's trust, my family's respect. And the score will never be even in my lifetime. More is always being revealed, you know, no matter how long that I'm sober, you know. Yeah. My son is 51 years old. He's lived in Europe for, you know, most of my sobriety. And a couple of years ago, we were talking about someone's birthday, and he said, I've never forgotten my 16th. He's never mentioned it before. And I have no recollection of his 16th birthday. So my sponsor said, ask him. But don't ask him over the phone. Don't ask him over internet. She said, you ask him face to face. But if you're not willing to accept the answer, don't ask the question. So he comes home. He's here about 3 days. And I said, you know, I'd like to ask you about your 16th birthday. You've never mentioned it before. So he said, Mom, you know, you told me to meet you at Chinatown in this restaurant, and I'd make it a really special day for you. So he said, I went down to that restaurant, and I waited, and I waited, and I waited. And of course, his alcoholic mother never comes. And then my former husband calls him and says, you know, Mother's not coming. She's having some challenges. And then I get on the phone in my alcoholic stupor and how I hurt him. He said, you know, Mom, I was so lost in those years. Our kids get lost. Our kids die. He says, you know, darling, I can't erase the pain that I caused you. I've been trying to do things differently for a long time. He said, I know, Mom. I said, but I will always be an imperfect person. And he said, me too. And he gave me a big hug. He was here, you know, last month, and, you know, on business, and it's really nice, so I take him to the airport. He goes to get on that plane. He says, I love you, Mom. I waited a long time to hear those words. This is a family disease. That little story, I was hearing this 34 years later. Okay? So more is always being revealed. So, you know, things we think as we get sober, things are just skipping along. You know? More is always being revealed. So I leave the door open. And when it comes open, I try and repair it. I do the best I can. Sponsorship is very important. I mean, I needed a guide. I still need a guide. You know, my sponsor has 58 years. She still has a sponsor who has less time than she does. She says, I need to be accountable. It doesn't matter. I have 58 years of sobriety. I have to be accountable. You know, I looked really, really bad when I came in here. I kind of looked like an emaciated ninja. And and she always looked like she stepped off a fashion magazine. So she'd come to meetings, she was sitting there. She's quite a bit older than I am, and I said, God, why does she look 10 times better than I do? Well, start simple, you know, comb your hair, wash your face, so she comes to me with this little box, you know, and she said, I have something for you. And so I opened up the box. I'm in my 3 shades of black, and I opened up the box. This bright colored blouse jumps out, she said, you know, darling, I saw this color, and I thought it would really look nice on you. She didn't say, you know, you look like a piece of, you know. She just said, you know, she never did anything to shame me. You know? So these little boxes kept on appearing with colors. She was trying to bring color to my life. Okay? So then she was bringing these skirts to somebody else at the meeting because she always had these shredded pants on. You know? Later on, I find out Kathleen's from the Ghetto Chicago. She cut out of Chicago when she was 14 years old because of the violence. She had 4 sons at the time that she was 20. Dragging around the United States packing a gun. And then women about pockets on, they gave her blouses. And they gave her skirts. And they helped her to have dignity and grace as a woman out of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she shared her experience with me. And that's what we do. We share our experiences with one another. This little yellow piece of paper, you know, people, and I've been reading this for a very, very long time. There's copies of this if anyone wants it. There's also copies of this poem on the butterfly if anybody wants it. Exhaustion. I don't need anybody to make me miserable. I can just do an incredible job of this all by myself. Exhaustion is the result when I use my energy on mulling over the past with regret or trying to escape a future that has yet to arrive. Anxiously hovering over it for fear that it will or won't come true, uses all of my energy and leaves me unable to live today. Yet living today is the only way to have a life. I will have no thought for the future actions of others, either expecting them to be better or worse as time goes by, for in such expectations I am trying to create, I will love and let be. All people are always changing. If I try to judge them, I do so only in what I think I know of them, failing to realize as much I do not know. I'll give others credit for attempts at progress and for having had many victories which are unknown. I too am always changing, and I can make that change a constructive one if I'm willing. I can change myself and others. I can only love. Have to give people the dignity of having their own journey, which is very difficult sometimes when we see loved ones destroying themselves. I've been a member of our sister program for a very long time, and a couple of years ago, I spoke at a 3-day camp out up at Occidental for 100 Alateens that have alcoholic drug addict parents. Want to hear some chilling stories? Alcoholic parents are very scary. I wish I had a place like that to go. I love to see children at meetings. We brought our children to the problem. It's really nice to bring them the solution. It took me about 3 days to come down to this because it was heavy. It was very heavy, things that kids go through. You know. Like I said, I've done prison meetings for a long time. And you know, recently one of the all these meetings I'm at, all these different prisons, I'm in there with 25 guys who are all in there for murder, okay? They're all in there for murder. How very easily I could be in a facility like that. There are consequences with drinking and using. So one of the men said his daughter had been visiting recently, and she said, Daddy, do you remember what I said to you when I was 10 years old? He said, I've never forgotten, darling. I said, Daddy, can't you just tell all the people how sorry you are so they let you come home to me? He said, I can't do that, darling, because Daddy's done some bad things and there are consequences. So she's been visiting her daddy for 30 years. Because she loves him. And I watched the faces of a lot of the men in the room, because a lot of them are not, they don't have people visiting them. Sometimes our families forgive us, sometimes they don't forgive us. This is alcoholism, and it's ugly. I was doing a pre-release program at the Federal Prison for Women in Dublin. I did it every Monday for 2.5 hours for a year. Okay. And we were able to bring in outside material. I brought in the poem of the butterfly. That's the purple paper that's up here. And because I think the butterfly signifies beauty and transformation. At the end of the poem, it says, people forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. So the last day of the class, the women wanted to have a little celebration, and they wanted the theme to be the butterfly. And the warden said you could have 1 hour after the last class. And so on. Claire and I come in to do the last class, and they'd gotten all this colored paper from the chaplain. So we walk in, and they turn the whole ceiling into a little mini garden, and all these colored butterflies were hanging from the ceiling, and colored flowers. It's a beautiful, beautiful image. And on the blackboard, you know, they made a big rainbow, and they said, we made it. Every Monday for a year was a big commitment for these women. And then they made a big heart, and the whole heart was comprised of butterflies. And they said, thank you for the way that you made us feel. And I hope I never forget how Alcoholics Anonymous made me feel when I came in here, because I was so broken when I came through. I think we're very wounded when we come into the rooms, because God can enter through the wounds. With the help of the steps and the wise sponsor, I was able to bring up things that had wounded me so deeply into the light and air so it could heal like any other wound. Emotional wound is just as deep if you've been cut or shot. Wounds heal from the inside out. And my wounds were very, very deep. Also, you know, I talked about death earlier. You know, there's no time frame on grieving. There's no time frame on grieving. Anytime there's loss, there's grieving. I always just equate grieving with death. Anytime there's loss, there's grieving. The loss of alcohol and drugs, grieving following that, okay? Loss of jobs, loss of home, marriages, relationships, even retirement, that's loss. Part of grieving is anger, you know, and there's no time frame on it. You know. This just happened a few months ago. I like the music of James Taylor, I've Seen Fire, I've Seen Rain, that song. And so I was driving in San Francisco, I was playing that song, and all of a sudden that song comes on and it says, the morning that I got the call that you were gone. And all of a sudden, the morning that I got the call that Klaus was gone, the man I talked about, my share, who had died. And all of a sudden, the tears just exploded from my eyes and I was sobbing. I had to pull off the road. I couldn't stop sobbing. So this was on a Wednesday, so I called my sponsors. She said, the two of you were so close for herself. Then on Thursday, one of my sponsees was speaking at a big speaker meeting over in Marin County. She asked if I'd go with her, and I said I'd be honored. But I know when I drive on that street, I'm going to be driving right by the tennis court where he had a heart attack and died. I can't help but think about it when I drive by there. Then the following day, one of my sponsees sends me all these animal pictures all the time. And so she sends me these animal photos. And there's a picture of a fawn with a white bunny. And his nickname for me was Bunny. It's just like he's saying, hi, you know. And then I look at the calendar. He's been gone 20 years. 20 years. And it was just like yesterday at that moment. And I'm very grateful. I think emotions are the color of the soul. I'm very glad that I can feel the joy, that I can feel the sorrow. Because when I came in here, I felt nothing. I was so shut down. I felt nothing. No. And Alcoholics Anonymous showed me how to be fully alive. My sponsor said, I wish you the joy of a purposeful life. Alcoholics Anonymous has shown me how to have a purposeful life. I was at Atlanta at the Martin Keith Memorial Museum, the Civil Rights Museum, and one of my favorite passages of his is, darkness cannot drive out darkness, only light can. And hate cannot drive out hate, only love can. So I come to you for the light and for the love. Why would I ever want to leave this way of life and not have the privilege to sit in this seat? But I have to remain grateful, because it's hard to drink and use with a grateful heart. Everything in my life, thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank you all for being here.